Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net and the fan text line where you can chime in. It's brought to you by Egger, Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Love interacting with our texters. Also pointing out, Benny Cunningham, number 89, is also a good high for the weather today, Sean.
Next time it's 89 and I'm producing, I'll include him.
Patrick Queen wears number 6. I am dreading the days that we have 6-degree weather in like the middle of January, middle of December. Typically, we get that like one day in February. The wind chill's like -5 degrees. He's one of the first people to speak to the media at Steelers training camp on report day. And according to Brooke Pryor, Queen said that he was surprised by all the Steelers' moves this offseason. He woke up to a text that said, wow, with the eyeball emojis, and thought he got traded for a second, saying sometimes it comes at a cost and you lose great people, but then you also gain great people. He also said that he thought that when he saw the Ramsey trade, that maybe he was getting traded. Patrick Queen stays and is going to be needed to be a significant, which I've said, I think, 10 times this today, significant.
Someone's keeping track.
Someone is on the text line has said that I've said it 9 times. Because that's the case. There's a lot of huge pieces on this year's team. I've said it as many times as Malzi hit straight threes. Because if these types of players don't perform at the way we think they should or better, this is going to be a long season. So Patrick Queen last year was 5th of all linebackers in snaps. He was 13th of all linebackers in pressures. I don't rely on PFF for everything. I do think that they're a good tool and a good resource. Like, PFF should be used to enhance an argument or enhance the value of a player. Not so much with stats like pass rush win rate taking precedent and being more of a higher rated category to use for argument's sake, whether it be defensive player of the year, first team all pro, whatever, than let's say sacks, tackles for loss, quarterback hits, stuff like that. Patrick Queen, according to PFF last year, had an overall grade of 58.5. That was, Sean, 125th out of 189 linebackers last year.
Maybe that's why he's worried about getting traded, huh?
Probably. Because, yeah, Minka didn't perform very well. He ultimately was dealt out. And another thing that I worry about with Patrick Queen is coverage. He's not that great of a coverage linebacker. 122nd out of 189 linebackers. Below average. A 53.8 coverage grade.
But he's still ahead of Cam Hayward in the NFL top 100.
Yeah, so voted on by the players, by the way. So the players think that Patrick Queen is better than Cam Hayward.
That's weird because you would say
disrespect and shade thrown at Cam Hayward.
You would say, oh, that's a reputation for Queen because he was so good prior to that. But wouldn't Hayward have an incredible reputation?
So what do we think that Patrick Queen is so good at, Sean, right? Run defense. He's very good at helping to stop the run. Well, if you watched every snap last year, it didn't seem like Patrick Queen was that great at stopping the run. Well, PFF agreed. Out of his overall grade and his coverage grade, of the 189 linebackers, the worst grade that PFF gave Patrick Queen was in run defense. 56.8, 146 out of 189 linebackers last year. Patrick Queen was brought here on what some people thought would be a more rich deal than he ultimately signed, but still an expensive contract. He's one of the highest paid players on the team, one of the highest paid players on defense. And he records a well below average run defense grade. That's what he was brought in here to do. Stop the run. Fix communication. Wear the green dot. Be somebody that this team could depend on against quality opponents coming over from the Ravens. Understands the division. Grass greener on the other side. And I don't think we've talked enough about how Patrick Queen has not been able to live up to the billing. And that this is a huge year two for him.
I'm guessing Landon Roberts probably graded out much better than he did. Certainly you would figure against the run.
Well, yeah. Landon Roberts, who ultimately went to the Raiders, had a much better season last year against the run. 5th best linebacker of those 189 with a 90.4 grade. Now, his coverage rate is not good. It's below average at 50.9. But the overall grade for Landon Roberts was 77.2, 22nd in all of football. They let Landon Roberts go, and they ultimately decide to bring in Malik Harrison at middle linebacker. Malik Harrison of the Ravens. They're just deciding to pick off linebackers from the Ravens and decide we'll just throw them in to the Steelers scheme and system, and they'll work fine. Malik Harrison had an overall grade of 50.7. Run defense, he was okay. Above average at 68. Coverage grade at 30.6. So you better hope that Peyton Wilson is going to be able to take that year two jump, which I do believe he's able to do, because Patrick Queen is even going to need some help and need some assistance. And frankly, he's had moments. He's done well at times. Remember that game against the Ravens? He had the forced fumble. Stuff like that. But Landon Roberts, it was right there to bring him back. So Patrick Queen, one of the first to report for camp, he is back in the fold and in need of a big year too, or else he might end up being somebody like Minka that could end up going. 412-928-9370. Here is Ken in Mount Washington to chime in. What's going on, Ken?
Hey, I'm just calling in, chiming in here. I know it's a Pittsburgh radio talk show.
Yes,
and there's a lot of homers here. But what are these people drinking? You got them drinking the Kool-Aid that they're going to the Super Bowl?
Ken, I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid. There's somebody that's drinking it. I don't know what spiked that Kool-Aid, but I don't believe it.
Yeah, but the one guy that called prior to me said that Super Bowl, we're going to the Super Bowl. I'm telling you what, they're not even thinking and talking about the team that's going to win the division, which is the Baltimore Ravens. Well, nobody's talking about them. They got a running game that we can't stop.
I think we all think, Ken, that they're going to win the division. Like, I think the ultimate highest ceiling possible for the Steelers is win the division to be able to beat out Baltimore. I don't think they're better than Baltimore. They're not better than Baltimore offensively. They're not better than Baltimore defensively.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is true. But the other thing, too, is if Joe Burrow has the year he might have, just like you're saying, Aaron Rodgers, if he has the year he might have, you know, it's about a lot of might-haves. Go with the facts. The facts is the Ravens that are going to win the division, and Pittsburgh people just won't accept it.
Do you think they'll finish second or third in the division, Ken?
Who is?
The Steelers.
Second or third? They're probably going to finish tied with the Bengals for second.
Tied with the Bengals. Thank you, Ken. Cincinnati right now has a defense that they're not paying their best player in Trey Hendrickson. He is currently in Miami after training in Cincinnati. He went to Miami basically to just hang out because the Bengals will not guarantee more than the first year. Wake up, Bengals. Notice the TJ Watt contract. Notice the Myles Garrett contract. Not saying you have to offer that, but guarantees past the first year. That is reality now. You know, Cincinnati, get over it. Their ownership group just doesn't want to do it. Well, too bad. You want to keep good players? That's what you have to do. That's what you did with Burrow. That's what you did with Chase. Trey Hendrickson's a really good pass rusher. He's not Watt. He's not Parsons. He's not Garrett. He's in that next tier. He's a $35 million a year player. 33 to 35. Shamar Stewart, they won't give guarantees in his rookie contract that are natural to what you are supposed to get as a rookie. So Cincinnati's got their own issues. They won't fix their own defense. That they got rid of Pratt, their leading tackler, last year. Their defensive line has been shifted, and not in a good way, and they can't even get their first-round pick signed. The Bengals might score 30 a year. They score 30 a game. They might give up 35 a game. So I'm not that confident that the Bengals are going to be this team that just runs through the NFL, because they're not going to be able to stop anything unless they get those two situations figured out. They're just not.
I'm still baffled by the Shamar Stewart situation. It just seems like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, they don't want to give him like guarantees that have been worked into previous contracts for players that are, you know, typical guarantees. They want him to basically earn them like incentives, I believe.
Second round picks are now getting guarantees by and large.
It's just Cincinnati, the way they do business, they have to change, they have to adapt. And they are frankly not willing to do that right now, which is just honestly flat out ridiculous. This should not be something. It's also a bad first impression on potential rookies that come in down the line. Everybody thinks that there's a stigma around Cincinnati anyway, that they're cheap, that they don't pay players, that they don't do good enough to be able to enhance facilities, stuff like that. Sure, they paid Burrow. Sure, they paid Chase. They had to. I mean, if you don't, what type of messaging does that send? Cincinnati, I'm very high on their offense, but their defense brings them back to the pack where I think they might win 10 games. But I still like the Steelers' chances against the Bengals because they've done decent against Burrow. They've kept that offense in check. And as long as they can score against a put-together ragtag defense, they got a good chance. Now, to pay off the tease, Ben Roethlisberger thinks that this season could be one for the ages. Ben, a two-time Super Bowl champion who was beaten looking for a third against Aaron Rodgers, thinks that A-Rod, if he does not take the Steelers to the Super Bowl, the season is a bust. This is On Football and was Ben and Spence.
Like, are we going to find a way to still go, you know, 500 with all this talent? Yeah. Or is it? Are we just gonna bury people and win a Super Bowl?
I don't. There's no way. I mean, this is when you build when Coach Tomlin built this team. There's no way that they're saying that we're like 500 or that that's not even like on the table right now.
Yeah.
This team right now is built, and what Coach Tomlin has built is a Super Bowl or bust team, in my opinion.
I agree.
And so, I don't want to sit there and say that anything short of that is a failed season, because that seems like that's unfair pressure. But it also feels like that's what they've built for. And so, it's not about, you know, just getting to the playoffs. Like, and it's not even just winning a playoff game. Yes, that's a step up, and that's great. But that can't be what is the final goal of this team. It can't be that. This team is built right now to go to a Super Bowl and to win a Super Bowl. And so it needs to happen.
Is it? I mean, outside of Tom Brady, quarterbacks in their 40s don't win in the playoffs outside of going to the Super Bowl with a lot of defensive spending where the league has shifted to offense, the rules have shifted to offense, offensive coaches typically are the ones that are winning. Look at Sirianni, look at Andy Reid. Look at just some of these teams that are the ones typically at the top of the NFL. There's a lot of offensive coaches. Now, sure, you could throw McDermott out there. You could throw Harbaugh out there. You could throw Tomlin. Tomlin also has not won a playoff game in 8 years. Most of the teams that win and win championships and go far have offensive coaches, or they have a coordinator that runs an electrifying offense. Ben Johnson with the Lions last year with Campbell more of a defensive guy. Dan Quinn in Washington. Cliff Kingsbury, former head coach, good offensive coordinator with Jaden Daniels. Joe Brady in Buffalo with Sean McDermott. A good scheme around Lamar in Baltimore. We don't know what the scheme is with Arthur Smith. We know that they want to run the ball heavily. Is it because they don't have the personnel yet, or at least they haven't, that we truly know or don't know what the Arthur Smith offense is? Like, I don't think Arthur Smith's offense is one that stacks up scheme-wise with motions, shifts, everything that comes with it, with the likes of Ben Johnson, Joe Brady, Andy Reid, Sirianni, those type of guys, Ben Johnson. That's why it's another prove-it type of year to determine what the case is with Arthur Smith and adding Jonnu Smith, DK Metcalf, how he best utilizes those players. But Super Bowl or bust? Sean, this is more like win a playoff game or bust. Super Bowl?
So, yeah, I would say talent-wise, if you're looking at the Steelers, what's the absolute best-case scenario, even if you're on the positive side of things, of where they rank talent-wise in the AFC? Fourth best? Best-case scenario?
Best-case scenario. They're not better than Kansas City. They're not better than Buffalo. And I would say, They're not better than the Ravens.
Right.
The rosters of all three of those teams are better than theirs.
Agreed. Even if you say, hey, I think they're better than the Broncos, which is iffy. I think they're better than the Texans, which is iffy.
Houston's good. Houston's got a better quarterback than them.
But you could make that argument if you see everything working out well and you think Rodgers will have a good season and these additions on defense will make a difference. You could say they're the fourth best team in the AFC. So how realistic is it to think, if that's the case, that they're going to find a way to knock off or get past or be the last team standing over those other three teams and avoid an upset along the way as well? I just don't see that happening.
No.
And that's why I don't think you can realistically say Super Bowl or bust. That's just putting expectations way too high for this team. There's no reason to believe. I mean, when was the last time they won a playoff game? Now you think that they're going to win potentially three playoff games? That seems very unreasonable. Even as we said, the fact that you can be overly optimistic this time of year, that's just not a realistic way of looking at things.
Yeah, I mean, look at how it turned out in Atlanta. I thought Kyle Pitts was supposed to be a star under Arthur Smith. I thought that Bijan Robinson, who had some really good years in Atlanta, was supposed to flourish even more than he did in that system with Arthur Smith. Play action offense, utilize tight ends. I mean, Drake London's a good receiver. It feels like, at least to me, and I might be wrong, they didn't utilize him well enough either. And when the pieces were all in place with Derrick Henry, a Hall of Famer, and Ryan Tannehill was just really good in that scheme, we know how good A.J. Brown is. They had a lot of really good pieces around them. Will that be the same with this Steeler team with Arthur Smith? I have my doubts, but I still think that it's good enough to be able to get them potentially a wild card spot. But in that case, you're playing matchups. If you're going to Buffalo, the final year of that stadium, extra juice, Josh Allen coming off an MVP, good chance he's going to go for another. Or Lamar, I mean, Lamar in the last two games that he played the Steelers have typically had Lamar's number. They have owned the Ravens over the last 5 years. Yeah, that flipped on that night in Baltimore when Lamar and the Ravens, despite a Minka Fitzpatrick interception, beat the Steelers handily and then whooped them in the playoffs. Derrick Henry, the running game, 300 yards on the field for the final 10 minutes their offense was against the Steelers defense. So Super Bowl or bust, how about win a playoff game first and then we'll talk? Like, I'm sure the mentality from Ben always was win the Super Bowl or bust when he was the quarterback, just because of the pieces around him. Tomlin was younger and actually winning playoff games. You have to be able to start on the ground before you start on the fifth level, the fifth floor right now. I mean, they're looking at the very top. They're looking at the penthouse when right now they should be okay with an apartment on the second floor.
I will say, players, as they head into a season, they should set their sights very high.
They
right?
should.
You don't want to settle for being mediocre or slightly better than that. If you're a player who's been around for 5-7 years, you desperately want to get a playoff win, and then you just want to keep stacking. You're not just going to say, well, we got one playoff win, that's all that we've really needed. But for the players to set that goal, that's one thing. For someone from the outside to say it's Super Bowl or bust, I just don't think that's realistic.
So, one texter says, Austin, so in love with Baltimore. They're 3-8 against the Steelers in the last 11. That's against the likes of Pickett, Trubisky, and Russell Wilson. In division is in division. Quit acting like Baltimore is Kansas City. I did mention that the Steelers have owned the Ravens over the last 5 years. That is very true. But it's also a what have you done for me lately league, and what have you done in the last two games against Baltimore, especially, and the playoffs are supposed to matter more than the regular season, right? And they got their lunch handed to them. So there is some concern because Baltimore does have a better roster than them. And I feel like Lamar Jackson has kind of figured out the defense. That was always the big thing. They just crushed Lamar. Great with the pass rush. Great with disguising things against Lamar. He would throw interceptions. He would not be himself. Lamar would not be himself against the Steelers. He'd miss throws. Remember the Mark Andrews two-point conversion that he missed, that throw? Lamar has always struggled against the Steelers. But in those last two games, it seemed like he found an extra gear. And that is something that should be a little bit concerning moving forward. So Super Bowl or bust, how about you try to win the division and have a home playoff game? Then we'll talk. 93.7 The Fan, 100.1 FM, and AM 1020 KDKA, as well as WAMO 107.3. are partnering to support Pittsburgh public school students for the school year by providing stuffed backpacks for the Pittsburgh for PPS Backpack Drive presented by Target Freight Management. You can support by purchasing backpacks or dropping off at a location near you, including Piata Italian Street Food in Robinson, as well as Northway Mall. For details, Visit 937thefan.com to drop off your donation. Brought to you by GBU Life, life insurance, annuities, and member benefits since 1892. Also, you can listen to the Pop and Joe Show on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And make sure to check out Breaking Bread, Jack Hillgrove, on the newest edition of Breaking Bread, presented by Saloni's Italian Bread. Sat down with Bill Hillgrove, his grandfather. You can watch it on the 937 The Fan YouTube page. Jack went to Gian Ellis in Greensburg to chat with Billy, as Billy talked about his long career as a broadcaster. And in a special segment found on Saloni's Instagram page, Bill reveals the former partner with whom he would like to be stranded on an island with. Who do you think that would be? Do you think Pat Bostick would rank high on that list?
I think the answer is Dick Groat. That would be my guess. Yeah, I haven't tuned in yet. And I will say the way it's phrased is a little weird, because I don't think anyone wants to be stranded on an island. Maybe that's the best option to be with, but I don't think you're actively rooting to be stranded on an island. Well, maybe some
Nobody
people
is. Are. If you were actively rooting to be stranded on an island,
Ron
who would
Cook,
you...
that might be up his alley.
I think Ron would thrive on a deserted island, because as long as there is just beer flowing and food out there, maybe they'll plant a Domenico's on the deserted island. That's all he would need, Sean. That's all the life that Ron would have to live. Sean.
Austin.
The people can call now to win 4 tickets to the Pony League World Series at Lou Hayes Pony Field from August 8th to the 13th. Sean will pick up your information. Caller number 6 to our dear friend Sean Myers at 412-928-9370 wins the Pony League World Series tickets. Really fun event. I was there for 2 years working the event when I was in college at Waynesburg. So make sure to check that out. Up next, Austin's Limitless List. The 7 Steelers I'm most keeping my eye on in training camp as it starts with the first day of practice tomorrow. Also, Tyler Kennedy will join us at the top of the hour. Dan Zangrilli, Mark Cabali, and Jeff Hathorn in the final jam-packed, loaded hour of Steelers talk, and Zangrilli from down at the ballpark will get a trade deadline discussion going with Dan, what Dan is currently hearing, and the newest Mitch Keller rumor that has dropped. And your thoughts at 412-928-9370. Sean has a headline, and we're right back on the Fan.
And welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. Jason Mackey, Austin Bechtold in for the guys. Our final segment together. Man, this shift, I say it every time I fill in, it just flies by. It's so much fun in the middle of the day. Thanks to Piatta, by the way, Italian street food, for bringing us some Italian street food. And today they were office food, and it was absolutely fantastic. Austin and I both crushed some of that. What did you get, Limits? Oh, Limits is on the phone. I'm sorry. He might be lining up Jeff Hathorn. Jeff will be joining us momentarily.
Piatta was very good,
it
Jason.
It was excellent.
I did catch that part as I was talking to Jeff. I had this crispy chicken wrap.
I did too.
That was really
crispy
good.
Crispy chicken BLT wrap.
Yes. I might have had 2 of them.
Did you?
Maybe.
You went back.
Well, no. I took 2 to begin with because I figured that they would be gone. And it was a large selection, so I didn't feel bad about it because there was a huge amount. So
yeah, and there's still a lot of food out there.
Is there?
Although it's only 1:30, so maybe we should allow people to make their way.
Pony and Muller will be chowing down a little bit later on.
That's it. Way to go, boys. Well deserved. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And the Fan Hotline is where we find the one and only Jeff Hathorn in Latrobe, about to watch the first Steelers practice of training camp. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, Jason. How are you?
Good. It is great to talk to you. How's Latrobe treating you?
Same. It's great. We just had our lunch as well, and apparently I'm not going to be the only one out here watching Aaron Rodgers throw for the first time. I thought maybe I get an exclusive, but...
Joined by a few of your friends, I see.
Yes. It's actually pretty, as you would imagine, it's a pretty good crowd, as Billy Joel might say, for a Thursday. And... I mean, it's not quite full in the bleachers yet, but I think there's a lot of people that forget some of the rules and have to go back to their car. But it's a cool excitement. You know, it's like training camp, but with a heck of a lot more fans that watch the practice.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, let's start right there then. It's a great point. I'm 41. I can't remember a training camp that is more interesting than this one. How would you describe sort of the feeling, the vibe, the curiosity, or whatever among the fan base for what the Steelers are about to embark on?
I think curiosity is a great word. I think there's excitement because of the names. Then there's the curiosity of, okay, what does Aaron Rodgers have left? Where does Jalen Ramsey play? What does Slay have? What about DK Metcalf? Who's going to be the number two receiver? How does Jonnu Smith? I mean, so you get these names. You have all these transactions, which they've never had before. Now it's, okay, how are they all going to piece together? And I think that's what makes this such a fascinating camp, probably more so than any other year, is just because there's unknowns in every camp, but not options with names that people know. You know, a few years ago, they had to throw rookies into a lot of positions because they didn't have the depth. This year, it's different.
So about one of those guys, Jeff, Jalen Ramsey, let's talk about him for a second. I thought it was interesting what he said yesterday, kind of throwing some shade about this is how I make my money or I've made my money in the end. He seemed to be hinting that like he's going to play some corner. At the same time, I could see the Steelers bouncing him around a little bit. Just what's your assessment of Jalen Ramsey, his fit, and what we might see out of him?
Well, of the three, he's played the most inside by far. He also has the most experience as a safety, if you will, than anyone else. So that makes him the easy one to say early. But if it's not him, then who is it? Is it Juan Thornhill and one of those guys don't get on the field? I mean, Tomlin's been adamant that those three are going to be on the field. The thing is, Ramsey's probably your best man cover corner. So how do you not put him out there? But Slay hasn't played on the inside very much. So it's really that part. And people will watch one practice and think they have it figured out, but it's going to take several because they're going to run a whole bunch of different combinations.
Well, it's also going to be like that on the offensive side too, Jeff. And to ask you about Aaron Rodgers, I mean, what sort of things are you going to be looking for today? I know in minicamp we didn't see a whole lot of him in team drills. Just what do you need to see? Is there anything you can see in day one that'll make you feel any certain way about this? What are you going to be looking for with Rodgers?
I mean, for me, I just want to see him throw more than 10 yards because that's all we got to see him throw in minicamp.
That's a good start, and preferably like with the defense.
Right. Like, let's see how it looks early on with him to Metcalf, with him working to Calvin Austin or the tight ends, or does any other receiver stand out? But, yeah, for me, for Aaron, I think the knowledge of the offense isn't going to be an issue. Will there be a cadence issue here or there? I'm sure. Will there be miscommunication early on? Probably. But I don't – you know, it's like Will Howard said about an hour ago, he's never met – now he's a rookie – but that he's never met or talked to a quarterback that understands the game like he does, of just how far advanced he is than anybody else. And, again, it's a rookie that's saying this, but he has been around some names over in camps and other things that he's been to. So how does this look out here and how quickly – I think more so can the other guys kind of rally around him and then – if there are plays that he likes or doesn't like, what's going to be his veto power? I mean, we've heard for years, you know, that whether it was Kenny Pickett or Mitch Trubisky or Russell Wilson or Justin Fields, that they met with Arthur Smith and then they came up with a game plan. Well, how much is Aaron going to be allowed to say, listen, this is what's going to work. Just kind of let me roll with this.
Jeff, one of the best parts about training camp, Limits and I were joking about this earlier, is just overreacting to everything. We can't help it. It's fun. You know, if we're going to be rational, I don't want to be here. What's your pick for the overreaction storyline of training camp?
That Will Howard is the next starting quarterback. Because he's going to show up in a game out here or in a preseason game, and people are going to lose their mind because he'll go 11 of 15 in the second half with a couple of touchdowns against many guys who won't be in the NFL by the end of August. So I think that's going to be the overreaction. It could be a running back if one of them has a hot start, but I think that, to me, the overreaction negatively will be the first time one of those defensive backs gets burned, that they don't know what they're doing. They can't have those three guys at the same time. You know, there'll be a miscommunication with Deshaun Elliott. Oh, they should have kept Minka, although won't hear a lot of that. But, you know, stuff like that's going to come, I think, as an overreaction.
So if they line up right now, Jeff, 11 on 11, well, it's probably not a good – what do you think the wide receiver pecking order is at this point behind DK Metcalf? Let's say it that way.
I think it's DK Metcalf, two tight ends, and Calvin Austin.
Okay.
If it's an obvious running situation or maybe a third and short, maybe Austin gets replaced by Woods. But I think those tight ends play, if not all, nearly all the time. Obviously, Metcalf's going to be out there. Maybe there's a third and tight where, because Jonnu's not a great blocker, that maybe he comes off the field. But I think that's going to be the pecking order. And I think the wild card here is, you know, the Connor Hayward being able to carve a role for himself. The one that is kind of crazily forgotten about, but was talked about so much during OTAs before the Jonnu ad, is Darnell Washington.
Hmm.
Like, how is Darnell, who was praised for being thinner, he looked faster, now all of a sudden, how does he fit? Because while he's a big guy, he's not a better special teamer than Cam or than Connor Hayward. So what is his roster spot on this team all of a sudden? And I don't mean from a release standpoint, but on a Sunday, like, where are his snaps?
I don't see it, Jeff. I don't see it. He and Denzel might be fairly similar. I don't know.
It's the same thing people get with, you know, oh, Ben Skoranek is a great special teamer. So Roman Wilson better show that he can play special teams, or he might be watching games. For as great as everybody thinks he looked, and oh, he was a third-round pick, special teams is going to matter when you're dressing all those other bodies and potentially dressing four tight ends for a game.
It is 1:42. Time to make that call to the Buell Insurance Agency. Get help with those premiums at 724-443-5610. Jeff Hathorn, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy practice. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, take care. Jeff Hathorn, Odyssey Sports Director. He's the best, enjoying the beautiful sights and sounds of La Trobe and St. Vincent College. We are back, baby! Training camp is about to get underway. I can't wait. Limits, I'm with Jeff. The one thing you have to focus your attention on, and I don't care. I don't care if it's overreaction season or not. It's Aaron Rodgers. Aaron bleeping Rodgers is the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers as they head to La Trobe for training camp. I can't believe that. Imagine telling yourself 10 years ago that we'd be going to a training camp, we'd be observing training camp, and Aaron Rodgers is in La Trobe. It's just wild. I think Limits is on the phone. I lost him. He's too busy working back there.
I was actually talking to Pony about something. He called.
Who are you?
I was connecting Pony there at Studio B today.
Oh, okay. All right. See, you're actually doing work. Here I am just blabbing about Aaron Rodgers and my excitement to see him as the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I apologize for my ignorance not listening, Jason, as I was on the phone.
We both sound like Starkey.
What is the premise of the question?
That no matter what, you have to start with Aaron Rodgers, and it's crazy to me that in 10 minutes, Aaron Rodgers is going to be officially the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers in La Trobe.
So
that's mind-blowing.
I will be at camp in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks, for PAC Media Day, and we'll also be able to check out training camp. And being able to see Aaron Rodgers in a Steelers uniform for the first time live and in person is going to be so weird.
I know.
And seeing him complete a pass to DK Metcalf will be even odder. I mean, what is this, the NFC Pro Bowl competition? I mean, that's what it'll feel like with Jalen Ramsey in coverage. That's ultimately what it feels like with this team.
Metcalf-Ramsey is going to be fun.
The only thing is, it's like those battles that Deontay Johnson and Joey Porter would have, or remember those battles with like AB against just insert cornerback here? I feel like that's what DK Metcalf and Jalen Ramsey is going to become, where it is appointment viewing for people that go up to La Trobe and want to just check out training camp. So that'll be seeing Rodgers in a Steelers uniform, though, will be very odd. It just is going to end up coming down to, Jason, can these experienced players show their experience in terms of production and not in terms of age, and show their age, especially Rodgers.
Couple more minutes. I got a fun topic for Austin to finish the show with, but first, make sure you check out our newest edition of Breaking Bread, presented by Saloni's Italian Bread. It's on the 93.7 The Fan YouTube page. Jack Hillgrove went to Gianelli's in Greensburg to chat with his grandfather. Bill talks about his long career as a broadcaster. It's a special segment found on Saloni's Instagram page. Bill reveals the former partner with whom he would like to be stranded on an island, of all things. 50-minute mark on The Fan, couple minutes early from that. My apologies. It's brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. Limit, something I saw on Twitter earlier today that I didn't know this, and I'm curious if you did. Did you see the Browns helmet and the dude?
Was hilarious.
I think it was a jersey unveiling. He fell off.
It was the helmet, so they unveiled like a new helmet.
Okay.
And
unveiling the Alpha Dog alternate helmet, yes.
Sponsored by Dude Wipes, by the way.
Did you know that the Browns were sponsored by Dude Wipes?
No, but I think it's absolutely perfect that the Browns are sponsored by Dude Wipes. It just matches perfectly.
It's so good. It is so good. I'm like ashamed that I didn't know this or see this. Why was this not publicized more? And the inevitable question, have you ever tried a Dude Wipe?
No.
I have. They're very nice.
Have you?
Very nice.
Interesting.
They make a nice product. I can't say I use them regularly, but there is absolutely a bag or box or whatever you want to call them of Dude Wipes in our house, and every so often. Yeah.
Well, the Browns are the Browns.
The Browns is the Browns.
And it seems like that fits perfectly as the guy was taking the video of the helmet of, I think, Brownie the Elf and the Dude Wipe mascot guy, and he completely fell into the lake.
Yep. Somebody, a commenter on the 93.7 The Fan YouTube page, Noah Hyles should get a Dude Wipe endorsement, and they could say they help with Noah Hyles piles.
Fascinating. My question also is, why was the helmet on a platform in the water to begin with?
Know.
Why is that your big idea? Sure, let's just put it in the water. That'll be cool. Why can't it be on land? Like, why did you ultimately decide water on a raft? That just feels like trouble from the start.
And I'm sorry. Yes, I completely agree with you. Also, have you watched the video of this dude falling in?
Maybe about 20 times by now.
Is it real?
Yes, it's real. How is it fake? I mean,
I think he went down on purpose. I think he took a dive.
No, there's no way he took a dive.
Dude, I've watched it 20 times as well. How do you not know that just land disappears?
I don't know.
It's like he kept going. He could see it in front of him, and then all of a sudden he was surprised when he took another step that there was no longer this flotilla under his feet.
It's Cleveland. Nothing surprises me that goes on up there anymore.
They should know they have ground. Did they not know how gravity works?
That's the mistake by the lake, Jason. They just want to indulge in more of the lake, apparently.
Man, there are some cities that, like, we're conditioned to hate as Pittsburghers. Like, Baltimore being one of them, right? Like, Baltimore's such a rival. We're supposed to hate the Ravens, whatever. You go to Baltimore, I don't know if you've ever gone, like, as a person, just as a fan. It's a great time. It is a fantastic time. I get into this discussion with people about Philadelphia. I don't like Philadelphia as a city. I don't stay anywhere near downtown when I stay by the airport. But, like, we're supposed to hate Philadelphia sports teams. Flyers Media Relations, Phillies Media Relations, Wells Fargo Center, Citizens Bank Park. They're great places to cover a game. Even the Eagles. From a working capacity, it's great. There are so many cities around here that we're supposed to dislike based on rivalries. And it's a fallacy. Cleveland delivers. I never look forward to going
to Cleveland. Cleveland delivers, really?
I mean, in stinking. I don't ever want to go to Cleveland. I have no desire.
I've been there a couple times.
Yeah, the best part was probably going home.
Typically, you know, the best sign of life in Cleveland is Pittsburgh, 241 miles.
It's a great t-shirt. It's a great t-shirt. All right, let's wrap it up. What's Cooking is brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester. Sunny today with a high of James Harrison, 92, 89 degrees tomorrow, and a 55% chance of rain. Fan weather is brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. This has been so much fun. Always enjoy working with you, Limits. We're back together tomorrow, too.
Yes, we are. I'll see you then.
The Route 51 Connection. The PM team is next. Peace.
Pony out today. He's playing dad daycare. Surprise dad daycare. I've been there. Donnie will be there someday. Intern Jack will be there someday, too, although he's like 10 years old, so he's got a ways to go. But Pony should be back in the saddle tomorrow. and ready to roll. I saw this story yesterday. I did not have a chance to include it in today's rundown. Hold on, as I text, as I say thank you to our tech guy, because he seemed to fix this. I saw this yesterday, and I did not include it yesterday in the show, but I thought today would probably be a good day for it. I was haunting the YouTube comments this morning listening to Crowley. I heard him going over it, and it was this story. So ESPN is starting to really ramp up all their football content. Not that it ever really goes away, because football is a 365-day-a-year sport, and ESPN has a major hand in making it that way. All good. They did this. They ranked across the NFL, and I do feel like, because the Steelers haven't won a playoff game in so long, that now we are reduced to sometimes doing, and I've blamed people for this with the Myles Garrett, TJ Watt individual battle. Like, back in the day, you used to get up in your ivory Steelers tower and say, oh yeah, that's fine, you think your wide receiver's better than ours, or you think this guy's better than our counterpart. We keep winning titles. Is Brian Hoyer better than Ben Roethlisberger? Oops, don't think so. Is Derek Anderson better than Ben Roethlisberger? Maybe for 1 year he was kind of close, but no. And so on and so forth. And like, getting mad sometimes about these things on social media, I'm not saying people are walking around going, did you hear? Did you hear how ESPN ranked their roster? But like, getting mad on social media about this stuff has become a bit of a pastime. So I heard Crowley going on and on about it and kind of breaking it all down and going piece by piece with Callis, who was busy researching the 1927 Yankees when he should have been paying attention. And I thought to myself, I don't think ESPN got this wrong. Like, this felt like sort of a necessary commentary on where the Steelers are at. That's at least how I looked at it. Because if you're jammed up that they rank the Steelers the 19th best roster in the league, basically bottom third or close to it, bottom third adjacent, I think that you're really just pointing out the nature of things and pointing out sort of where they rank or how they have adjusted or not adjusted, the Steelers, that is, of course, versus the way the NFL has adjusted or shifted around them. Because when you rank an NFL roster, you rank it understanding that the quarterback position is of outsized weight and importance above all the rest. That should just go without saying. That's why I found PFF ranking Garrett number one among all players in the NFL so silly. He plays a very important position. He is not better than Burrow, Jackson, Mahomes, Allen. You can probably make a case for Stafford, even at his age, to still be way up there. You know that the quarterback position, if you're doing one of these rankings like ESPN did, you know that that like carries a massive amount of weight. How many times have we said in the Mahomes era, the Chiefs don't have the best roster. They just have Houdini wrapped up with, like, NFL Jesus under center, and it just papers over so many issues. They beat the Niners, what, twice in Super Bowls. Both times, top to bottom, the Niners probably had better rosters. They beat the Eagles in a Super Bowl. Probably Philly had the better roster. They finally got smoked by Philly, and they got smoked by Tampa in situations where they were so compromised coming in, it Mahomes just couldn't keep doing what he was doing. But then I like looked at the list and I don't know, it makes sense to me. Baltimore best roster according to ESPN. I'd quibble with that because they have Philly at number two. I'd flip-flop them. I would. Now, they probably got the bump because Jackson is better than Hurts, but Philly's roster top to bottom is as stacked as it gets. Howie Roseman's the best doing this, and there's a reason that they are in contention every single year now. It's because of him. Detroit 3, no issue there. Buffalo 4, same deal. KC 5, that sounds about right. They've still got arguably the best in the game, although he's got real competition. But their roster, sometimes you look at it and you say, there's little holes I could poke. Here's one that should surprise and possibly worry you. Denver at 6. Bo Nix ain't the dudes that are in front of him at quarterback, but Bo Nix is better than I thought he would be, and that roster is good. Capital G, good to very good, even, around him. Problem. If you're scoring at home, four of the first six teams on this are AFC teams. Washington 7, they have Daniels. The Rams are 8, they have Stafford. The Bengals are 9. Joe Scheisty, where are you, Don? Joey Burr, your buddy. The Niners are 10th, even with their roster going through a little bit of a transition period. I think Purdy's still good, and they still have Nick Bosa. They still have other dudes. Minnesota's 11th, dudes. Got players. Tampa, that is a very good roster. I think Tampa might actually be undersold. Houston, Green Bay, Chicago, I thought was a little odd. The Chargers have a good roster. They just have to get out of their own way. I think Arizona, Dallas, Steelers, 17, 18, 19, go any way about it that you want. Point is, like, I think this is just putting on display where the Steelers are deficient. They have 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback. You know, if you take a standardized test or something, or if you take a test where the essay portion is weighted 75% or 65% and everything else is weighted 35%, if you ace the essay portion and are okay at the rest, you're probably going to get a better grade than the guy who gets an A- at the rest and has a C or a C- at the essay portion. That's what it is with the Steelers. Oh, wow, you think Cincy's weaker because Shamar Stewart won't show up, Trey Hendrickson won't show up, and they've got major problems on defense? They've got Joe Burrow. In today's NFL, I would rather try to win games 41-38 than I would 17-14, period. Oh, you think the Ravens are not as complete? They maybe don't have a great offensive line. Jackson, Lamar, done. Like, this is a reflection, I think, what ESPN came up with here, of two things for the Steelers. How they've chosen to build this team, which is sort of the more minor detail. And I think it's really, if you're going to, Larry and Lawrenceville, cover your ears, pal. Okay, here comes some real negativity. It really shows how, since Roethlisberger retired, they have absolutely bungled the quarterback position. If they had just for argument's sake, taken Brock Purdy, and he had essentially proven himself to be the same kind of player he is with the Niners, so definitely a top 12-ish quarterback, I would say, in the league, is where Purdy sits. Steelers would probably be 5 or 6 spots higher in this. They'd probably be around where Minnesota or San Francisco is, because you'd feel pretty good about their quarterback, and then you'd like a lot of other pieces. They bungled quarterback, and they have built more on defense than anybody else in the league for a pretty good long while now. How do you come up with anything other than that? They have now a quarterback who's coming off a 5-win season, about whom there are real questions as far as how much is left in the tank. They just traded Minka. They traded George Pickens. Yeah, they sort of zeroed out both of those and then some, with those two are out. In is DK Metcalf. In is Jalen Ramsey. In is Jonnu Smith. They've got questions at tackle, both tackles. They're thin, I think, on the defensive line after Hayward in terms of proven commodities. I don't love their corners that aren't named Jalen Ramsey. Darius Slay is 34. Joey Porter Jr. needs to have a bounce back third year. Juan Thornhill stunk last year. Deshaun Elliott's good. I like him. But, like, they're not in the class or the caliber of pretty much any of the five teams at the very top. If you start looking around at Denver's roster, you see that they've got a lot to like. It just feels like an accurate thing. And it feels like a reflection of, hey, we chose to build on defense. Please pay no attention to the fact that that defense gets run over late in seasons. And, hey, we still haven't figured out quarterback. Get back to us when we do.
Brian, thank you for joining us. How did the 6th-round pick out of Ohio State look yesterday in what was his first ever training camp practice with the Steelers?
Before we even get into that, Crowley, I love the clip, the Tomlin clip that Callis played coming back there. Starts with, it's very simple, and then he goes into this very detailed, multi-layered explanation about how NFL coaches divide up their reps. So, like, I literally had that thought in my head while he was saying it. I was like, Mike, that wasn't really that simple. I mean, that seems sort of convoluted way to answer the question about Aaron Rodgers.
This is the time of the year that I always found, back when I would be at camp a lot, that you actually get the most out of Tomlin. I think Tomlin is refreshed after the offseason, and I don't know that there's anybody in the league that loves training camp more than Mike. So you're always going to get him in a good mood coming off the field of training camp.
Yeah, he's not sick of us yet.
And no, that too.
Exhibit A, I asked him like 3 questions yesterday, and all of his answers were fairly nice and even somewhat expansive. So, yeah, good observation there on that.
I hate to ask this, but I'm going to anyway. Did Brooke Pryor ask questions, and was he nice to her? Because that might be the ultimate barometer.
Yeah, I don't think he was really curt with anybody. So, yeah, that's a very good, that's a good sign on day one, practice one. Now, also, if any injuries pop up, that's when things can get a little dicey. But, yeah, so far, so good. Smooth sailing. Will Howard, too. I mean, speaking of it, like, I thought the on-field stuff, I mean, yeah, he looked somewhat poised. I guess the guy that I can always, first pop into my mind when I think of a rookie at Steelers training camp is Kenny Pickett, his first year. And the spotlight was so much brighter on him because of gestures wildly at everything. But he looked, I thought, a lot more skittish. And, you know, maybe that was just some of the guys in front of him were stocking shelves a couple months later. But, I mean, yeah, I remember him looking like the game was moving pretty fast. And it wasn't like any of us, I don't think, were clamoring for him to move up the depth chart quickly. With Will Howard, I don't think it's going to be long before, you know, Skylar Thompson, all due respect to that young man, is in the rear view and Howard's working in there as the third quarterback.
When the Steelers lined up for their first offensive snap, assuming that they had multiple receivers on the field, who was the number two receiver, Brian?
Well, they lined up first. I think they came out in 11 personnel, so three receivers. If you want to give the nod to Roman Wilson there because he was on the outside opposite DK Metcalf and Calvin Austin was going in motion, I suppose you can do that. But, you know, it's just as likely that Calvin Austin will slide up and be the de facto number two when they work the two tight end looks. And I'm curious to see, you know, what it does look like when they go to more of that, because Jonnu Smith was held out of the team drills yesterday. Maybe I jinxed him by writing about him early in the morning. You know, stories up on the Post-Gazette website. Talked to him for like 5 to 10 minutes outside the Steelers locker room. And then a few hours later, he's not even practicing. So good job by me.
Well, let's get to that. So you've covered the team for a while now. You've been to scores of Mike Tomlin press conferences. Last year, oh, no big deal. Russell Wilson will be fine. Lo and behold, he doesn't play until week 7. Oh, Isaac Seumalo, he'll be fine, misses 4 games. Are you able to sift through potential BS here and determine whether or not the Jonnu injury is serious? Do you believe it is, and do you think Seumalo's is?
I don't think Jonnu Smith's is serious at all. You know, he was actually doing a little bit of, I think, the individual stuff, and maybe it was just out of an abundance of caution here for someone who's about to be 30, you know, what, 7 or 8 years in the league. Like, that, they'll get him integrated here eventually. Seumalo, I mean, I don't know. It seems like it's always something with him, and I guess you could put him in the same bucket of, like, he's by far the elder statesman on the line. He had a little bit of a country club camp a year ago because of some nagging stuff, and then, you know, yeah, he does have that pec injury leading into week one, so it might be a combination of, yeah, he's not feeling his best, but also they need to be extra careful with somebody like him to avoid what happened last year. And, you know, they need his experience on the line. But, yeah, I would say by and large, not quite as durable as you'd like him to be after signing him from the Eagles. But I don't get any indication that it's going to be long term.
Brian Bacco of the Post-Gazette joining us here on the Fan Morning Show. And the Fan Morning Show is brought to you by our great friends, Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. I read, or at least I think I did, perhaps I was dreaming it, Brian, did TJ Watt actually come on an A-gap blitz during yesterday's practice?
You know, I'd have to watch the coach's film to say if it was the A-gap or the B-gap, but I certainly noticed him kind of moving around laterally a little bit, trying to make the offensive lineman guess where he was going to rush from.
How about that?
Yeah, I'd say TJ was very active yesterday when he was on the field. And then maybe third or fourth snap, I think he straight up dropped into coverage. That might have even been where Scotty Miller ended up catching that first Aaron Rodgers completion as a Steeler in practice, was an area vacated by TJ. So, yeah, I mean, I see a spry TJ on this team. Probably 30's the new 20. You know, all these guys are touting the idea of finding the fountain of youth. And I guess you have to do that when you've got about a dozen of them. So we'll see how that holds up into September, October, November.
I guess I should ask you about the obvious guy, Aaron Rodgers. We spent a lot of the morning talking about Aaron, but Chris Carter had his opinions on how it went. How about you? How'd you think day one looked for Mr. Rodgers?
And if we're just going by what we saw, and I don't really think even Rodgers himself would necessarily disagree with this. Like, it wasn't an impressive day. There wasn't much that made you say, okay, that was nice, that was sharp, whatever, but it was day one. And Pat Freiermuth was talking to us after practice, a few of us, and said, yeah, this is really his first reps in our offense. And, you know, we'll get it right for the long haul. Meanwhile, the little voice in the back of my head, the internal monologue, was like, it didn't have to be. Like, he could have been here earlier, but I digress. Alas. So I guess that's water under the bridge until it isn't anymore.
I don't really care if he's getting picked off right now. It's the acclimation period. I know he doesn't care if he's getting picked off. I think for him, this would be the time to get those out of the system. How did the arm look? How'd the movement look for Rodgers?
Yeah, the arm still looks good. You know, the movement, I don't know that there was enough of a sample size to really evaluate that. But yeah, I mean, the arm definitely still has the zip on it. What I want to see maybe a little bit more, especially when you have DK Metcalf on your team, is, okay, you've got the zip to throw it over the middle and squeeze it into some tight spaces. How are you pushing the ball down the field? I mean, we all got to witness the Russell Wilson moon ball, and say what you will about Russ, but he absolutely still had that club in his bag. And even when I was watching him last year in training camp, once he did get healthy, I was questioning the movement ability, especially because of the calf, but I was not questioning the live arm that he still had at his age. And I think it's going to be kind of similar with Rodgers, but yeah, I'd like to see him try to uncork a couple, you know, whether it's this week or at some point out there in Latrobe.
Juan Thornhill, according to reports and the eyes and ears of people like you, Brian Batko from the Post-Gazette, lined up as first-team free safety and second-team free safety. Is he the only free safety they have on this roster? What the hell's going on there?
No, I actually thought when the second-team defense was out there that the pairing was Miles Killebrew and Sebastian Castro. Neither one of those guys is, I think, your prototypical free safety. They're both more of hard hitters, closer to linebackers than they would be a deep safety. So that's still an area of the roster where I think there's no obvious backup, so to speak. You know, you've got like some down the liners, I guess, who can do that. Like a Quindell Johnson is one of the guys. Hopefully he hasn't been cut yet. But for the most part, they're kind of lacking a second viable option there. But if Jalen Ramsey is going to start picking up some of those snaps, then, you know, once you get to week one, it's not going to matter as much if you have a two deep at every position, if Ramsey's going to be the jack of all trades, like Mike Tomlin's making it sound.
Do you think, and it is as early could be, that you're going to see a ton of Ramsey at safety? Because I don't mind a sprinkle and a wrinkle. What I do mind is taking one of still the best man cover corners in the league and kind of cutting his legs off.
Yeah, I mean, I thought on report day, he was... I mean, he pretty much said all the right things, but he also kind of made it clear that, you know, it's like the Andrew McCutchen, this is my spot video from way back when. Like, he kind of made it clear, I'm still a corner. You know, that's what I get paid handsomely to do, and that's what I'm best at. So I don't think he'll be resistant to moving around, but to answer your question, I wouldn't necessarily say we're going to see a lot of him there, because I also just – don't really think that's the vision. I think the Steelers' vision was, you know, we need top flight corners more than we need top flight safeties in our division and in our conference. So that's what we're trying to go out and accomplish. And, you know, you're going to see a heck of a lot of that nickel and even maybe dime defense once the rubber meets the road here in the AFC North.
Caleb Johnson is the Steelers' starting running back by week what?
Ooh, he certainly did look good yesterday. Now, you know, people sometimes get mad about that because it's like, oh, they're unpadded practices. It's not like the defense can really do anything, but it was still impressive how quickly he got to the second level, yeah. I thought. And Jalen Warren had a nice run in there too, so I don't want to discount him. How about by week seven? I'll say by week seven, Caleb Johnson at least might be starting some games. I think it could be game plan or opponent dependent with them. And maybe even regardless of who gets the first carry, ask yourself, by what week is Caleb Johnson getting more carries? And it's probably a factor of who's got the hot hand. Is one guy running really well that day and you just don't want to take him off the field? I could see Caleb Johnson picking up that kind of steam by the, yeah, I guess first quarter or first third of the season.
Batko, you are a distant relative of Dan Marino, and I may or may not have run into you at the Devonshire backyard brawl, and you were wearing a Dan Marino jersey. I talked to Pat Narduzzi and Eli Holstein today on the show, and then, you know, there's a photo up afterwards. They were here in the studio. I now have all of my West Virginia fan friends in a group chat. They have clipped the photo to me with my arm wrapped around Pat Narduzzi and both of us smiling. I'm never going to live this down. I'm a professional. What am I supposed to do?
And you're a social butterfly. You can mix it up in Morgantown circles, of course, but you can also, you know, weasel your way into some pit circles. And that's what we love about you, Crowley. That reminds me of a good anecdote from this offseason. I took my kids to some event over in Bakery Square. I think it was actually on April 12th. It was like 412 day or something. And who was there passing out smiley cookies to kids but Zach Frazier?
Hey.
And my five-year-old happened to be wearing a Pitt hoodie that day. So I took a photo of them together. And, you know, Zach was nice enough to give a little thumbs up. But then he said afterward, he's like, yeah, I should have actually done a thumbs down. That would have been better for the Mountaineer brand.
Future Hall of Famer, Zach Frazier. It's a good story.
I can send you that photo when I hang up here, Crowley, and you can put that in your group chat as well.
Please do, Brian. Thank you, buddy. That was really good information, and let's talk here soon, okay?
Yep, anytime. See you, man.
Who? Yes, for those of you wondering why I had wide eyes, it was John Jaha discussion. I have Donnie in here for a reason, because what we're eventually going to do here is just right in his wheelhouse. But two things hit me. TJ Watt signs his big contract. So you know how, like, the sausage gets made thusly in what we do for a living, and especially this time of year. Usually, sports talk, you're reacting to things that happen. You are sometimes not creating the narrative per se, but you're giving your opinions, and then those give rise to, like, narratives, and that becomes a talking point in and of itself. If you have opinions big enough that they become the storyline, that's kind of the Holy Grail. This is the middle of summer. We just got out of All-Star Week. It's still ramp-up time. When camp starts, that's when everybody's really going to, you know, put the gas pedal down, and here we go. So when TJ Watt's in the news for signing his extension, naturally there are going to be some stories that come out that involve even tangentially TJ Watt, and they're probably going to get on radars around here. And so there were two of these lists that came out recently that caught my attention. One this morning had Pony the Mouth. The other one, I swear to God, I think he missed, Donnie, because it might have made him angrier if he had seen it. So the one I'll talk about in a second is Monday Morning Quarterback at SI put together their all quarter century team. And they had a couple of their writers vote for this. So it was Albert Breer, it was Connor Orr, Gilberto Manzano, Matt I don't know how to say his last name. Verderami, I think. John Plum and Mitch Goldich. And they had a six-man panel, and that's how they voted. So that didn't make me too mad. Where Watt falls on that did not have me foaming at the mouth necessarily. It was something else, though. PFF, did you see this? PFF put out their top 50 players heading into this season in the NFL. Okay? Who do you think was number one on the list? PFF top 50 NFL players.
Josh Allen?
No. Guess again.
Lamar?
Guess again.
Now I'm starting to think it's not a quarterback.
Well, you haven't said one other quarterback that I'm stunned you didn't say.
Mahomes?
Nope, wasn't him either.
It wasn't a QB.
It wasn't. It was Myles Garrett, number one player in the league. Micah Parsons was in the top 10. I think he was like 7th. TJ Watt was 10th on this list. And I like PFF. I respect what they do over there, what they try to do on a regular basis. I'm sorry. If you talk about being the site that, like, quantifies quarterback play, probably above everything else, but also goes after every individual thing, but does so from the perspective that quarterback play is automatically the most important because it's the most important position on the field. And you tell me that Myles Garrett is not just the best edge rusher in the league, but the best player in the league. I'm tuning out. I think there's one defensive player in the last 20 years who probably warrants that kind of discussion, and that's Donald at his peak, because he was that disruptive and that far ahead of everybody else. The idea that Garrett is not just the best edge rusher, fine. If you want to have that opinion, I can certainly be persuaded that that's actually the case. He ain't better than Mahomes. He ain't better than Lamar. He ain't better than Josh Allen. He ain't better than Joe Burrow. No way. Absolutely no way. I'm not even sure he's definitively better than Trent Williams when he's healthy. He was number one and Watts down there at 10 with Parsons sandwiched in between him. So that one got me first. I think Pony missed that one. Because, you know, he'd have been calling for a raid of the PFF offices because he would have accused them of doing drugs.
Well, PFF does have a love affair with Myles Garrett. We all know that. But, I mean, my goodness. Number one.
Even I, the guy who understands, like, and I don't say understands. That makes me sound like I get something that everyone else fundamentally does not comprehend. I put stock in when they say pressures matter and other stuff matters. Even if that is your rubric and you love the guy because he gets double and triple teamed and he still generates pressure, he is not better than any of those quarterbacks named. If you ask the PFF people, okay, because really quick here, by logic would dictate that if they said he's the best player in the league heading into this season, right? If you asked everybody at PFF, who would you start a team with in the NFL, would they then say the best player, Myles Garrett, right?
Yeah.
Which nobody there would say. They'd say, give us at least the four quarterbacks that are behind him first.
And probably a couple of others.
And probably one or two other. Probably Matt Stafford would still, well, maybe not at his age, but you get what I'm saying. So I found that to be distasteful, to say the least. Then there's the other one. And this is what I wanted to do with you here was go through the Monday morning quarterbacks all quarter century team. So they voted on it. The six guys we just mentioned, they made their votes. They had a first, a second, a third team, and others receiving votes category, how this worked, okay? So they have the votes in parentheses. You just want to run through this all-century team, and you can tell me, stop me if you think anybody got disrespected here, generally.
Yes.
I know you love this stuff. I know you just eat this up. If you were doing this...
Remember some guys.
If you were doing a show tonight and there wasn't a Pirates game on, you and Borges would be remembering some guys for a damn hour here, okay? Quarterback first team, Brady... is the first teamer, Mahomes second team, Manning third team, others receiving votes, Lamar, that was it. So there's 36 total points, I guess, to be gleaned here, and it was Brady getting half, Mahomes, Manning, Jackson. Any major issues there?
Yeah, I think that shed out pretty well. I mean, plus Jackson got just the one.
No votes for Rodgers, no votes for Breeze, no votes for Eli, no votes for Ben.
Rodgers is probably, I mean, dude's a four-time MVP.
I think
now that you're thinking about it, I'm putting him above
Jackson. I'd put him above Jackson with respect to Jackson, who I think is singular and unique. I'd put him and maybe Breeze even, but definitely Rodgers. Okay, so we would both put Rodgers in there instead of Jackson. Running back, first team, LaDainian Tomlinson, 17 points. Second team, Adrian Peterson with 12, Derrick Henry with 9. Third team, Shady with 4. Others receiving votes, Frank Gore, Sean Alexander, Saquon Barkley, Edge James.
I think they pretty much nailed the first and second team. I mean, I think Shady's worthy. I mean, Tomlinson, I think more yards than anybody in the 2010s or something?
Yes, he's an all-decade team guy. Peterson has a case, I think, above Tomlinson, and if Henry keeps going like this for two or three more years, but Tomlinson was so good in his prime. He wasn't He wasn't the force of nature physically that Peterson was, but he was so good as a pass catcher. Marshall Faulk probably a couple years early for this because he would have, you know, if those greatest show on turf Rams teams had done more in the 2000s, he'd be up there. Get Sean Alexander off this list. No offense. Fine. Like, nice that you had that one awesome season, pal. Wide receiver, Larry Fitzgerald, Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson, your first teamers. Second team, T.O. and Julio. Third team, Tyreek Hill, A.B., Marvin Harrison. Others receiving votes, Mike Evans, A.J. Green, D-Hop, Andre Johnson, Steve Smith Sr., and Anquan Boldin. I'd put A.B. higher up. I've got to bump somebody off that list.
I think A.B., I might put him ahead of both of the guys on the second team.
I think
so. At minimum, I'm putting him ahead of Julio Jones.
It's very hard. Here's the problem for me on the first team. Fitz did it every year, not always with very good quarterback play until he had Kurt Warner. If you asked me, though, of Fitz, Moss, and Johnson, who of those three I'd bump for A.B., it might be Fitz. Megatron.
It's hard for me to complain about any of those.
I know,
three.
But I put AB on every list I make of best receivers I've ever seen. I put him third behind Moss and Rice. So in theory, I have to put him ahead of both of those guys. But now should I be reconsidering where I put AB in the all-time history of the position? I'm putting him above T.O. and Julio, and there's a ton of people that'll argue with me about T.O. I don't know, man. This was like an eye test thing. I watched all the guys on this list because it's easy to watch them. AB at his peak was as unstoppable as any player on this list, maybe save Randy Moss. Even Megatron. Yeah. Even Megatron. Tight end, Travis Kelce, first team. Gronk, second team. Others receiving votes, Antonio Gates. I'd flip first and second team.
So would I.
And Gronk's better than Kelce.
What about Tony Gonzalez?
2000s. He did, what, first 4 or 5 years of his career. Gonzalez, he led all tight ends since 2000 with 13,289 yards. He probably should have been in there. Quickly, your first team O-tackles, Ogden and Joe Thomas. Thomas got more votes. I have no issue there. Trent Williams, Walter Jones, second team. Tyron Smith, Lane Johnson, and then Orlando Pace, Jason Peters. Pace should probably be higher on here somewhere.
I'd probably flip him with one of the guys on the third team.
Zach Martin and Fanica, two biggest vote-getters at guards. Damn right, although Martin got one more point than him. Hutchinson and Marshall Yanda at second team. Jari Evans and Joe Tooney at third team. Mankins, Quentin Nelson, Lindstrom, and Will Shields all got votes. I'm a little surprised Nelson was as low as he was. Jason Kelce at center. Kevin Mawai, second team. Pounce, third team. No real issue there. Although no. Kelce almost gets too much love at this point. I'm a little fatigued.
That happens when he's a media buddy.
Jeff Saturday, Linderbaum, Alex Mack all got votes there. Again, stop me if anything. Here's where it gets. Here's where it goes. All quarter century team, MMQB at SI. As Johnny the Barber texts me and asks me if I need BFF's all quarter century team. No, I think we're good on how many Ohio State players you could name today. Who would be the dumbest out of pocket? He'd have like Doran Grant from the Steelers.
Well, I was going to say
he'd have him on the all century team.
They've had a handful of
He'd have Chris Gamble on the all century team. Jeff Okuda. Edge rushers,
Eli
though.
Eli Apple.
Julius Peppers. J.J. Watt. Miles Garrett, first team. Jared Allen, DeMarcus Ware, Von Miller, second team. Jason Taylor, Khalil Mack, Michael Strahan, third team. So remember, this is melding together DNs and like off-ball or outside linebackers, depending on scheme. Others receiving votes, T.J. Watt, Cam Jordan, and Ball So Hard U's most famous graduate, Terrell Suggs. Man, Watt being behind Stray. I know Strahan won Super Bowl and everything else. Super Bowls, right? I think. Maybe just the one. Some nasty work there. I know these are all like Hall of Famers to be or
already in
guys, but Garrett, here's the problem again, man. Why is Garrett all the way up on the first team? Why is there that much separation?
Yeah, there should not be.
I am somebody who just said last week, I think Garrett is the slightly better player. It's an unpopular stance in this town. Have we lost our minds? Is Jared Allen's too high up here?
I would almost put DeMarcus Ware up on that first team list.
I wouldn't put Garrett up there, man. Win one thing. I know the argument's the same for Watt. Win one thing that matters in the postseason.
I mean,
one.
What is Khalil Mack really ever won?
Ware and Von Miller basically won the Broncos a Super Bowl.
Yes.
They did.
That was Ware late in his career,
yes,
too. But, like, okay, Khalil Mack, who I think at his peak was a elite player, defensive player of the year winner. Like, what has he ever won, though, in the grand scheme of, like, the team?
I know sport? This is, like, Pittsburgh person on Pittsburgh high school graduate crime here.
Jason Taylor.
What is Jason Taylor? I mean, okay, he did win. I forgot he won Defensive Player of the Year. I did forget the DPOY. Three first-team All-Pros. I don't know, man.
Watt already has more.
Right. Jason Taylor, 1, 2, 3, 6 seasons with double-digit sacks in a 15-year career. I don't know, man. I'd put Watt above him.
I think the problem, too, is that, I mean, I know that they just did it all edge.
Yeah.
I mean, they mixed in a lot of DNs.
Yeah. Defensive tackle, quickly here. Aaron Donald, most votes there. Chris Jones, first team with him. Warren Sapp, Richard Seymour, Ndamukong Suh, Geno Atkins, Kevin Williams, Calais Campbell, Haloti Ngata, Fletcher Cox. No Cam Hayward. If Calais Campbell's going to be on there, Hayward should be on there.
Yeah.
If Fletcher Cox is going to be on there, Hayward should be on there. At least, I'm not asking Hayward to be on the first, second, or third team. I can make a case for him over Geno Atkins. And I know they're, again, like mixing this together like a witch's brew. But Hayward's got to be in there somewhere.
And I thought Haloti Ngata was like a scary dude, but at no point
no
is his top level better than Cam Hayward's.
inside backer, I got to go quick here because, of course, I didn't budget my time. Ray Lewis and Bobby Wagner, first team, ass, forget that, no way. They said Lewis was a no-brainer. No, yeah, you're right. You have no brains if you put him above Luke Kuechly and Brian Urlacher, second team, Derek Brooks, Patrick Willis, third team, London Fletcher, CJ Mosley. I'll say it right here.
My guy, London Fletcher.
The third team, Brooks and Willis, is better than the first team, straight away. Straight away, give me that first team definitely over the third team definitely over the first team.
Did Brooks? I'm trying to think of his career. Like, he was late 90s when he came in, right?
Yeah, but the majority of his really good stuff, I think, was in the 2000s. His Super Bowl.
I also am. I'm probably a bigger Kuechly fan than I should be. I just feel like that guy.
He was a monster. He got hurt. Same with
should
Willis.
Be closer to the first team.
All right, corner. Revis and Woodson on the first team, Bailey and Sherman on the second, Rondé Barber, Pat Peterson on the third team. No arguments there, really. Rondé Barber, kind of surprising, but he was around for an eternity.
Nnamdi Asamoah, who we haven't heard his name in 10 years.
800 years. Jalen Ramsey. I mean, you could probably convince me that Ramsey deserves to be a little higher, but I don't know who I'd bump other than Rondé. Polamalu, Ed Reed, equal 18-18 vote-getters for safety. That finally, they got something right here. Dawkins and Earl Thomas, second team. John Lynch and Honey Badger, third. Sean Taylor, I feel like that's one of those Jimi Hendrix at 27. Oh, no, that's not a good comp. Give me a musician that like was always thought of as better than they maybe were going to be, or you know they were because we got cut short tragically. You know what I mean? Sean Taylor was on a good track, but I can't put him that high.
Yeah, I do always wonder about his career because
he's in the same.
It started off very good. I understand
yes.
that, but. People project like this guy would have been a slam dunk Hall of Famer.
He's in the same tier as Eric Berry, Rodney Harrison, Darren Sharper, Harrison Smith, and Eric Weddle. I don't know. That feels a little. If he plays till he's 32, maybe he ends up being on the first team of this list, but that feels a little weird. I'm not going to go through the specialists with any kind of, you know. It's Vinatieri, Tucker, Butker, Guskowski, and Elam. And then it is Shane Leckler, Andy Lee, Johnny Hecker, and Thomas Morstead. Dante Hall, your kick returner, then Patterson, then Hester, then Cribbs. That's kind of a surprise. Hester is a punt returner, then Sproles, then Dante Hall. And Kyle Juszczyk gets your fullback nod. Lorenzo Neal and Tony Richardson. All right, Don, we went way past.
Ray Fittipaldo has seen the team in the interim at OTAs, at minicamp. Anybody who wants to can go see the Steelers practice tomorrow. A lot has changed since that terrible moment, that terrible game, the 299 rushing yards put up by the Baltimore Ravens. Will the changes pay off? Ray Fittipaldo joins us now from the Post-Gazette to discuss. Ray, brought to you by the Western PA injury attorneys of Larry Kelly and Joe George from LGKG, your home team. Ray, do we find you on Route 30?
Not quite yet, Adam. They will not let you on campus until 9 today, so trying to time it up. I should be on 30 in about half an hour or so.
Very good. We appreciate you multitasking. Please keep your attention as much as you can on the road, Ray. We need you to get there and report to us from training camp once a week. Ray, the Steelers have a ton of ifs, and Bill Cowher once famously said, if you go into a season with a bunch of ifs, you're probably not going to be very good. So we spent the better part of the last hour trying to take some of those ifs and putting them into the category of positives by season's end and negatives by season's end. Let's start with Rodgers. He's a huge what if. He's 8 million years old. He didn't play all that well last year. Do you think he'll wind up being good for the team, or do you think he's going to go up in flames like he did last year?
No, I don't think he's going to go up in flames. I think he is... I don't want to say by far because he is 41 years old, but he's the best quarterback the Steelers have had since Ben Roethlisberger retired. I think that's worth something if he stays healthy. The offensive line is going to be a huge part of that. Jaylen Warren and Caleb Johnson are going to be a huge part of that. But if they can keep him upright, I do think by season's end, and let's not even say 17, let's say he plays 14 to 15 games, I think the Steelers are going to be in contention for a playoff berth in the AFC if that happens.
All right, so another unknown, the offensive line, particularly the tackles positions, where Faltan, who's basically a rookie, and Broderick Jones is now finally where he belongs on the left side. So you say they got to keep Aaron Rodgers upright. Do you think those two guys in particular will?
Yeah, it's funny when you talk about the offensive line because they spent all of their draft resources, or their, you know, their highest draft resources in recent years on the bookends. And I don't know about you, I go into the season feeling almost more comfortable or more certain about the centers and the guards. So, yeah, I mean, Broderick Jones is a huge unknown at this point. He didn't play well last year. He's moving to a new position. I know it's his old position, but he's moving to a new position. Then you have Troy Fontana, who I think, if he can stay healthy, he's going to be fine, Adam. So, yeah, I think the tackles are really the season, the offensive season is going to hinge on how those guys play. I'm not really worried about Fontana, but I am a little bit interested to see how Broderick Jones responds from that bad season last year.
The Steelers ran the ball a ton last year, Ray, and they are fixing to do it again, I would guess. Will they be more effective running the ball with Jaylen Warren and now Caleb Johnson and Kenneth Gainwell?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Jaylen Warren has been waiting for this opportunity. You can make the argument, Adam, that he should have had more touches and more carries the last couple of years.
For sure.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does. And, you know, you're saying, can they be more effective? We've talked about this since they drafted Caleb Johnson. Caleb Johnson is a really good fit for Arthur Smith's offense. And, you know, Najee Harris was a good back, but he wasn't a good scheme fit. So, yeah, theoretically, the running game should be better, but you got to have the blocking. You can't have these guys being tackled 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage, or, you know, touch two yards behind the line of scrimmage, like we saw so often with Harris and Warren the last couple of years. So if they can get that cleaned up, yes, I do think the running game can and should be better.
Ray, will they acquire another wide receiver? They do have $25 million in cap space. And if they do not, assuming DK Metcalf leads them in target share, who do you think would be number two on the current roster?
I think among receivers and tight ends, or just receivers?
Oh, you're reading my mind, Ray.
Yeah, I will say Pat Freiermuth will be the number two target. And then after you get past Pat, you know, I think you're probably looking at Jonnu Smith or Calvin Austin, 3-4, something in that range. But in terms of acquiring another guy, I do think you'll see training camp and maybe even a preseason game or two play out before they address that. Listen, if they're comfortable with Calvin Austin as the number two, hey, let's say Roman Wilson's having a really good camp, you probably don't have to go out and get that guy. But the argument I would make is maybe you do have to get that guy sooner rather than later in case there's an injury. Because if there's an injury, they just become really, really thin at receiver, and you don't want to be in that position going into the season.
That's the same thing that happened last year. The Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. Ray, let's flip it over to the defensive side. I think the biggest question there is, how are they going to use Jalen Ramsey, Darius Slay, and Joey Porter Jr.? I'm guessing that's one of the things you're most curious about seeing up camp.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Jalen Ramsey, obviously all-pro outside corner. You know, he's dabbled in the slot the last couple of years. He could certainly do that, and I think that's probably where he's going to start with the Steelers. Darius Slay has never played in the slot. Joey Porter doesn't really have the build, you know, for that. He's 6'2". I think they want to keep him outside. So I think you'll see Ramsey start in the slot, but I also think you'll see him play outside, and I think you'll see him play some free safety as well. I mean, that's another position since they traded Minka that there's a big question mark there. You know, Juan Thornhill, is a veteran. He started a lot of games in the NFL, but he might be at the end of his career, certainly at the end of his prime. And, you know, there are some good safeties still on the open market. So that's, like receiver, that's another position that they possibly could address at some point here during training camp.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Ray. They've been so aggressive this offseason, and really they've been aggressive under Omar Khan. Now you got $25 million to play with. and a couple of holes on the roster. I'd be shocked, frankly, if they didn't add a wide receiver or add a safety. Ray Fittipaldo, he's on his way to training camp. He's joining us here on the Fan Morning Show. Ray, T.J. Watt wants to move around. Do the Steelers move him around? Are they going to blitz more this year? Are we going to see a different scheme for the Steelers defense than the one they were running last year, where I thought they were really predictable?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. You know, we've seen Omar Khan make drastic changes after the way last season ended. That's the personnel end of it. Now we have to see schematic changes, because what they did last year, you know, with the old personnel, but let's face it, a lot of that personnel is coming back. Your most important personnel, T.J. Watt, is coming back, and they got to find ways to free him up. So I'm all for that. I think, you know, I don't know if they're going to show us what they're going to do in the preseason games or even in these practices, guys, but once we get to the regular season, yes, they have to move T.J. Watt around. They cannot continue to do what they did the last couple of seasons, where he's really a sitting duck, and it's easy for offensive coordinators and quarterbacks to scheme into good plays against him.
Ray, did they do enough to address the defensive line this offseason? Obviously, they bring in Derek Harmon, and they get Y.A. Black, but I still look at the depth there, and I'm worried, and it's tough to count on a rookie to be great, even if that rookie's a first-round pick.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to take a couple of years to rebuild that defensive line. I think it's going to be like the offensive line. You know, the expectation is next spring they're going to draft a quarterback in the first round. But, you know, those other picks I think are going to go to addressing the front seven again. And I think it's much needed, especially with Cam Hayward, you know, nearing the end at some point. You're going to have to find his replacement as well. So, you know, I think they started to do that this offseason. You know, you also get Y.A. Black in the middle rounds, fifth round. You know, I think he's going to challenge for a spot in the rotation. After Hayward, Harmon, and Keanu Benton, I can't sit here and tell you, other than Y.A. Black, because he's a draft pick, I cannot sit here and tell you, Adam, that there's another shoe in to make the 53-man roster among the guys who are now on the 90-man roster. Maybe Daniel Equale, because they signed him as a free agent.
Right.
But, you know, Loudermilk, Leal, Lowry, all those guys. There's going to be a lot of competition, you know, for those final spots in the rotation.
I know that any team in the NFL is going to have a big problem if one of their best players get hurt. But Cam Hayward is getting close to 40, and he was an all-pro last season. If he's healthy, I just will expect him to be great until he's not. But you're one Cam Hayward injury away, even if he misses two or three games, from, yeah, I think, being in a really awful spot on that line.
Well, look how bad it got when he was injured 2 years ago.
Yep.
You know, it was just a disaster. You know, up front for them.
And so, Ray, not to interrupt you, but when he was on the field last year, the yards per carry allowed was among the best in the NFL. With him off, yeah, the field, it was among the worst in the NFL. He's that important.
Yeah, and like, how can you play a 36-year-old 80% of the snaps? You could do that when he's 27, 28, 29, but you got to start rotating guys in there. That's why I think, you know, people aren't talking about it, but I think Black is going to have a role on this team. Obviously, he's got to prove it during camp, but that guy's a big body, 335 pounds. They're looking for big bodies who can help stop the run. So everybody's talking about Harmon, but I'm going to be keeping an eye on Black as well.
Ray, who are you most excited to talk to today? You don't know who's going to come in the front door, who's going to go in the back door, yeah, but if you had your druthers, who's the guy you most are looking forward to speaking with?
Yeah, I would probably, just because we haven't talked to him yet, Jalen Ramsey, maybe Jonnu Smith, but Jalen Ramsey, you know, we keep hearing that the Steelers like his versatility, but I want to hear him talk about possibly moving to free safety. You know, he hasn't done it a lot, but a lot of guys like him in the past have kind of made second careers out of going to safety eventually. So I think we'll get a pretty good feel for how he feels about it today, and yeah, he's one guy, hopefully, who stops on the hill and talks to us.
Ray, I love that we're going to have things to react to the next time we speak on Wednesday, buddy. Enjoy your time up camp, and we will talk to you then. Be safe.
Thanks, Adam. See you.
See you, buddy.